Today is Transitions Tuesday on Mind Talk. I am your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Transitions Tuesday, we focus on all things related to the many different kinds of transitions we all have occasion to experience in our lives.
Many of you have talked about the sense, the burdensome sense sometimes of feeling really stuck in your life and you want to do something to make it different, but you're just not sure how, and you may not even believe that you can. Today's guest, Alex Braddy, is the author of From Chaos to Clarity, Getting Unstuck and Creating a Life That You Love. Now, Alex Braddy was a superstar in the public opinion polling field. She was one of the youngest partners ever in a prestigious Washington, D.C. research firm, and her job was to listen to people, find out what they think and how they feel. She tuned into their emotional responses to get deeply in touch with their whys in life. And yet, Alex had not done that work for herself. Today, she will talk about that work and From Chaos to Clarity, how you can get unstuck and create a life that you love. Alex Braddy, welcome to Mind Talk.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Pamela. It's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Now, Alex, you started off, or at least you spent a significant amount of your career in the public opinion polling field, and yet today what we're discussing is a book that you have written entitled From Chaos to Clarity, Getting Unstuck and Creating a Life You Love. I have to say that there would be many folks listening who would say, wow, you know, working in the public opinion polling field, that sounds kind of interesting, but you actually chose to leave that field. Why is that?
I did. I was in it for a long time. I had a 15-year career in that research field. And of course, you know, when I first got into it, I wanted to do that. I found it very fulfilling. And I did very well. You know, I made it to the top of my field. I was a partner in a very prestigious firm out of D.C. But ultimately, over time, what happened for me is that it became unfulfilling. It started losing meaning and purpose for me. And so here I was devoting an incredible amount of my time to my work, and I really was working long, long hours. I was on the road a lot, away from my family, and I was, you know, the volume and pace of work was incredible. And it got to the point where I really just felt like the sort of the hamster on the wheel and keeping going and going and going because I felt I should. Here I was, I'd built this career, but when I really looked at it, I just found no meaning in it anymore. It just changed over time for me. And so I realized that something had to change. If I wanted to experience change, then I had to make some changes in my life. And so that's what I set out about doing. Now, at that point, I didn't know that I would ultimately give up that career and move in a different direction, but I certainly knew that I had to approach things a little differently. And so that's when I started making changes in my life and, as it were, started my journey of getting unstuck, because it really did feel at the time that I was very stuck in what I was doing.
Well, it's interesting because you clearly gave the experience of enjoying meaning and purpose in your work a high degree of importance. And I am sure that there are many people listening right now who are living a life that is similar to the life that you've just described, where they're working probably 25-8, and their whole lives are consumed with their work, and they're probably making at least enough money to live on, but they continue to do it. But for you, that was simply not enough.
Yeah, I just felt that, you know, life is really, I mean, it's such a cliche, but it's so true that life is too short, right? And if we're living a life that we are not enjoying, if we are spending the majority of our time doing something that essentially feels like, you know, you're just grinding through it, which is what it felt like to me, then what's the point, right? I mean, what is the point? I mean, we are all here to essentially find joy and freedom and happiness in our lives. And if we're not finding that, then you may want to stop and take a look and say, okay, well then, you know, what can I do differently? And it doesn't mean that you have to change your career. It doesn't mean that you have to make enormous changes. But you can, you know, little by little bring things into your life that start to bring back some fulfillment and creativity and meaning for you. And that's really what I did. I mean, this, none of this happened overnight, you know. Sometimes when you make these big changes, you know, when you're sort of on the other side of it and you're telling people about it, they think that you suddenly just, like, figured it all out overnight, made the change, and hey, presto, here you are 2 days later. No. It took a while, you know, for me to make the decision to ultimately leave what I was doing. And even during that process, when I was sort of trying to come to my decision, I slowly but surely was bringing different things into my life and sort of releasing old habits and old behaviors, but bringing in new habits and new things into my life that allowed me to feel more fulfilled even when I was still in that space. So all of this sort of happens incrementally. And I know that, you know, maybe we don't always want to hear that, you know, it isn't sort of an overnight solution. But it's actually a good thing if you make changes like this incrementally, because inherently, as human beings, we are resistant to change. And so big changes especially instill us with fear and all kinds of, you know, sort of keep us stuck in place. So incrementally making changes in your life is really the place to start.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. I guess one of the things that I wonder, and because I've certainly heard it a lot in my office, there may be one partner who is really doing well professionally and financially and comes to the place where you are now, and the other partner is really resistant to the change in large measure because the change could very well mean a difference in lifestyle. How does one combat the challenge between living in a place of clarity for self versus perhaps having to battle a loved one who's just not in the same place?
Yeah, and I think, you know, that is a challenge that some people face, you know, especially when we decide we want to make a change in our lives. You know, it can impact others, obviously. I think the place to start there is you really do need to get clear on what you specifically want first, right? I mean, you can't really make a change unless you're clear on what it is you want to do. I mean, you can, but it won't go very well for you. It'll be a little bit all over the place. So I think you have to get very clear on what you want. And then if there are other people that are, of course, impacted by whatever decision you're contemplating, yes, of course, bring them into that conversation. And I think the key is to sort of realize that how you approach what you're going to do and the beliefs that you bring to the table in doing it are going to have an important impact on this. And what I mean by that is, so if you have some sort of like underlying belief that, if I stop working as hard as I am, then, you know, we're going to suffer financially, something like that, then essentially that's what you're going to experience because that's how you're going into it. That's what you're approaching. You can approach it in a different way, and, you know, maybe you can't, maybe it doesn't feel good to you to sort of look at it and say, oh, it'll all be okay, I'll work less hours and we'll still be okay. Maybe that's a little too much of a stretch, but looking at it and saying, you know, I'm making changes right now, but I'm in the process of creating a life for myself where I can choose to earn income in different ways, or I can choose to find abundance in my life in different ways. And so how you approach what you're doing, that mindset that you go in with, and those underlying beliefs that we all carry around with us in our subconscious have an incredible impact on not only how you experience the change that you're contemplating, but also the people around you. So I think it's really important to examine that and see if, you know, are there beliefs that need to be essentially reprogrammed or, you know, reworked before you start on your journey?
You know, at the beginning of your book, you ask the question, are you stuck? And what I'm wanting you to talk about for a bit is how one can tell
if they are indeed stuck? And I ask that question from the perspective that, you know, a lot of times people will say, well, I'm just having a bad day, or I'm really afraid of change, or, I mean, there are any number of reasons that people tell themselves they need to do whatever they're doing. In fact, you yourself make the point that many of us convince ourselves of things that are not our truths. So, again, I ask, how can one tell if they are indeed actually stuck in some part in their life, be it a job, a relationship? How do you identify stuck?
Yeah, well, most people already know they're basically stuck because the symptoms are pretty strong. But just to give you some examples, if your life isn't moving in the direction you want it to and you are not sure how to change that, you're stuck. If you are essentially living Einstein's definition of insanity, right, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results, you are stuck. You're stuck on that hamster wheel like I was a few years ago. And if you have sort of feelings of frustration or anxiety, maybe you feel really burned out in what you're doing, maybe you feel very stressed a lot of the time or overwhelmed, or perhaps you just simply know that there's got to be more to life than what you're currently experiencing, chances are you are stuck. So there are different ways that it can show up, but essentially it's that feeling that you're in a situation that you really don't love, but you're not really sure how to change it. And so you end up kind of stuck in that place and not sure how to move forward.
When you discover or allow yourself the awareness that you really do feel stuck, how would you say that one works to avoid perhaps the guilt or the self-recriminations? Here I am in this place that I don't particularly like, and now what do I do? Look at all the time I've wasted, is something that folks might often tell themselves.
Oh, such a great point. I'm so glad you brought that up, because one of the first things I tell people when they're stuck is to essentially hit the pause button and assess the situation, kind of like a neutral observer, and accept it for what it is, right? Because very often when we look at where we're at, we're basically hating on it, right? We're resisting it. We don't like it. And just like when you go to the gym and you lift weights, you're doing resistance training. Well, when you do that and you lift those weights, you're making your muscles stronger. And the same thing happens in your life with different situations. So the more you push against the situation, the more you resist it, the more you kind of strengthen it and lock it into place. So instead of getting to that place where you're just like, oh, I hate it, I can't believe I got myself here, or having guilt around it or something like that, just accept it for what it is. And in doing that, it doesn't mean that you're accepting it that, oh, I'm just sort of resigning myself to the fact that this is how it's going to be. No, 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 no. It's just accept that that's where you are today and know that you can change. And it's really not until you accept it for what it is that you can actually start to change it. So that is really a key step along the way.
Would you say that courage is a part of this process?
Oh, absolutely. Courage is essentially the pivotal point where you can start to move things. So I talk about this in the book too. I mean, we experience all kinds of emotions in our life. You know, there's kind of like an emotional scale, you know, and at the very sort of at the bottom of it, at the lower end, it's sort of, you know, powerlessness and guilt and feeling unworthy and anger, you know, feelings like that are kind of on the lower end. On the higher end of the spectrum is, you know, happiness, joy, enlightenment, feeling empowered, okay? And we want to be, of course, on that higher end of the scale, right? Because when we're in that place, when we're sort of vibrating with that energy and with those feelings and emotions, we're able to attract those good things to us. And courage, in terms of that emotional scale, is really the pivotal point between tipping from, you know, sort of, you know, that lower point in the scale or neutral point, right, as you're kind of coming up, you're sort of a neutral, boredom can be a neutral point. But taking courage and having courage to sort of explore something new or to make a change or to just take a first step on your self-discovery journey, that is essentially the very first step in moving into that higher end of that, of the emotional spectrum, and experiencing those better feeling emotions like optimism, hopefulness, joy. So courage is so incredibly important in all of this.
You know, I as I'm listening to you speak and looking at your book right in front of me, From Chaos to Clarity, Getting Unstuck and Creating a Life You Love, my eyes are drawn to a review that you quote on the cover, A Step-by-Step Soup to Nuts Guide to Reclaiming Freedom, Joy, Love, and Abundance in Any Area of Your Life. And it occurs to me that that concept, which I think is a perfect description of what your book is, but that concept of enjoying freedom and abundance is one for so many people that seems like a star they will never reach. It seems like a goal that maybe they see it as selfish or just unattainable for them. Attainable for others, but not for them. And so the fact that you have indeed created literally a soup to nuts guide where you are, as you said, in your own life, walking the reader through step by step what they can do and what they can think about in a different way, I think is so important to actually creating the change that you would like to encourage people to create.
Yes, and I love that you brought this up, because I know that many people do feel that it is out of reach for them to sort of have this idea, this sense of freedom and abundance in their life. And, you know, I felt like that too when I was stuck. I mean, that's kind of the irony of this whole thing, right? Like, when you look at my situation, it was one of those deals where the outward perception was that, you know, God, she's got it all going on. She's got the big job and the clients, and she's traveling all over the place. Like, what's not to love about her life, right?
Exactly.
But inwardly, that is not what I was experiencing at all. I felt very stuck. And I did, you know, I had financial abundance, right? So I had abundance in sort of the conventional sense of the word, but I didn't really have abundance in other areas of my life, right? I didn't have abundance in sort of the time and, you know, space to spend with my family, to spend doing things that I actually enjoyed in life. I mean, I was actually in lack in a lot of other areas in my life. So it was very out of balance. And I think what's important to remember is that, you know, whether you are financially well off or not, abundance does not just mean money. Abundance means all aspects of your life, right? It means, you know, your family, your relationships, community, you know, it can be your career, it can be, you know, your recreation. It's all those different aspects of your life. And so when you feel like, oh, abundance is so out of reach for me, you know, I'm stuck in this like job where I'm like living paycheck to paycheck, well, you are focusing then on lack. It's the lack of abundance that you have. And so you continue to create that place for yourself, right? But you can put yourself in an abundant mindset by essentially focusing on what you do have, right? And it doesn't have to be about money, but it can actually positively affect what you're experiencing related to money too. But anyone can stop and look at their life and practice gratitude. We all can wake up every morning and look at what we have and choose to focus on that and start to look at where you are abundant in your life, instead of defaulting into, yeah, but I don't have this, and I don't have that, and other people are doing so much better than me. Stop with that, because that's all that you just continue to create more of that. Focus on what you do have and where you are abundant in your life, and think about all aspects of your life when you start to focus on that, because that really does help you get that mindset and realize that you can move to that place.
Alex, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, there are three questions that you ask folks to ask themselves. And we've talked about some of it, but I just want you to go through them in succession to make it perhaps a little bit easier and more understandable for our listeners. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Thank you. Alex, the three questions that you ask in your book, in what areas of my life do I feel stuck? Is it just in these places? Walk us through those three questions and how you would like our listeners to approach them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at, yeah, when you're first sort of assessing, you know, where am I stuck, right? You know, you do need to look at different areas of your life. I mean, sometimes we forget that our life is made up of all these different aspects, right? We just sort of get focused on, you know, this particular area is not working so well for me. So how, you know, I get so sucked into that. But I mean, there's different parts of our life, right? We have our work, we have finance, we have family, relationships, social, you know, our friends, our social life, our health and physical well-being, our community, our spirituality, our personal growth, our emotional well-being, right? These are all aspects of who we are as holistic beings. And so what you want to do first is kind of look at, okay, what are the areas I really feel stuck or anxious or frustrated? And write them down. You know, I mean, put your pen to paper on this stuff because it does help bring clarity. And then take a look at, you know, is it just these specific areas where I have issues to address? Or is this where the frustration or anxiety primarily shows up? So if it is, when you sort of think about your life and you just think, okay, is it just in my work that I'm experiencing this? Or is it essentially it manifests there the most? Or is it just in relationships that this happens? When you start to look at all those different aspects, you then can kind of ask the third question, which is, do I have patterns of behavior that run through various aspects of my life? Because sometimes we do think that, you know, oh, well, everything's going great except for whatever the is, right? Let's say it's your work. You know, if my work were better, then everything would be perfect. But when you take a closer look at that, sometimes what's happening at work, you might be repeating patterns of behavior there that you do in other parts of your life, whether it's with relationships with other people. And so it's really informative to kind of take that sort of holistic assessment because it helps you essentially get to the root of, okay, what is it that truly might be keeping me stuck? Maybe it's not just my job. Maybe it's actually sort of about me and some of the beliefs that I hold, and that sort of drives me to act from that particular place. Because ultimately, we are creating our own lives, right? We are responsible for our own lives. And I know that can be a bitter pill to swallow at the beginning if you sort of are in this place where you don't like it and you say to yourself, what do you mean I created it? I don't even like this. Well, you actually did. You made choices and decisions that have led you to where you are. But the point is that maybe you didn't realize you had choices and decisions. Maybe you were kind of making them by default or on autopilot. And by discovering that you do make those choices and decisions, that you do create your life, it's very empowering because it means moving forward that you can be much more deliberate about it and become much more self-aware about what the things are that drive you. And do you have beliefs in your subconscious that you know need to change and sort of be reprogrammed so that you can move forward and act in a different way and make these changes in your life?
One of the things that I'm hearing from you that I would simply like to underscore is while this, if you look at the whole thing at once, it can seem huge and overwhelming, but you really are talking about piece by piece, step by step. And from that perspective, I think you would agree that folks can then begin to look at the lives that they're living now with some curiosity and perhaps some positive excitement. I can do something different. I really can make the change. I'm really not so stuck as I thought I was or as other people told me I was.
Yes, and I love that you use the word curiosity because curiosity certainly is a much more open idea, right, than sort of dreading the, like, oh my gosh, I got to look inside, I got to, like, do this inner work, I have to make changes, right? When we think about that, it can often send us into that sort of sense of dread and fear. But if we approach it with curiosity, like, oh, well, this is kind of interesting. What am I going to unfold here? What am I going to discover if I do look within myself, if I do examine sort of some of these beliefs that I have? Then you're coming from a different place, right? You're coming from that place of sort of exploration. And isn't it cool that I'm uncovering these things about myself? Because, gee, while I may not love everything I see when I first do this, it means that I am learning, I'm becoming knowledgeable about what it is that really drives me. And so then I do have this opportunity that I can actually change it. And so I love the idea of coming from a curiosity place and sort of approaching it with that. It's almost playful, right? Curiosity is almost like a playful idea as opposed to this kind of, you know, this dread that some of us have about doing sort of inner work or self-discovery and looking within, right? Sometimes we feel like there are monsters under the bed. You know, I don't want to look because I don't know what I'm going to find out. So it's better off to just live in ignorance, right? But it's not, because if you're living in ignorance, you can't change any of it. It just becomes the same old, right? So if you really do want to get unstuck, you know, try the curiosity approach and sort of look at it as this sort of like little treasure hunt of exploration that you're doing within yourself.
A treasure hunt of explorations. I like that. I might steal that.
It sounds fun, right?
It does. It sounds like a lot of fun. Now, Alex, I noticed that a few minutes ago you talked about the value of writing things down. Do you have a recommendation or a preference with respect to the action of writing? Do you want folks to write it by hand, which I know some folks think is just a crazy thing to do these days, or is writing it on the computer okay, or what are your thoughts about just that activity?
I do have a preference. So, and let me be the first to say that I am all about typing on the keyboard, right? I'm not a big fan of handwriting things anymore, simply because I can't do it as fast as typing. I mean, we're so conditioned, right, to be on keyboards these days. However, when it comes to this kind of stuff, when it comes to sort of asking yourself these questions, when it comes to examining your life, when it comes to practicing gratitude and some of these other things that we can do, I am a huge fan of writing it down pen to paper, because there is something really powerful about sort of, you know, physically moving it out of your body, right? You sort of, you have these thoughts and feelings, and as you, you know, your hand and your fingers are holding the pen and moving on the paper, you are essentially sort of physically transferring some of your emotion and some of your thoughts and feelings out of your body and onto the page. And it's very, very effective to do that. It also, I believe, helps you get a lot clearer on what it is that you really want to explore. Because you'll start writing something and then, you know, your mind kind of then goes to this place where it's sort of free associating, because you are in that sort of free flow, you know, free flowing handwriting, as opposed to sort of being hemmed in on your computer and, you know, constantly hitting the backspace key because you didn't type it right and you've got your autocorrect going on and all that stuff that's sort of distracting from what you want to be doing in this space, which is essentially all that right brain activity, right? The sort of the creative part, the part that wants to sort of explore thoughts and feelings. And when you're typing, very often the left brain kicks in, which is all that logic and I got to edit it and this is spelt wrong and let me go back, it's not a proper sentence, blah, blah, blah. And that stuff just gets in the way of truly being able to explore those thoughts and feelings that you want to get deep on.
So the person who is hearing your guidance and says, okay, let me pick up my pencil and find the eraser so that if I make a mistake, I can erase it. What do you want them to think about?
No, don't do it. Don't do it in pencil. Pick up a pen. Pick up a pen, because there's nothing wrong. There is no right and wrong in this stuff. I mean, that's kind of the point. It's like, you know, sometimes we feel that, okay, you know, if I'm on this journey, it's all about feeling good. It's all about trying to keep my energy in a good place. But you can't do that 100% of the time. And in fact, when those other feelings come in that are lower on that emotional scale, like anger or frustration or sadness, they are messages for you. You know, those are good things. So no feeling is bad, right? No feeling is actually negative or adverse for you. It's actually a message. It's sort of like a GPS for your soul, if you like, in the sense that It's letting you know that, okay, something about the situation's a little off for me. I'm out of alignment. What's going on? And it's sort of your, it's your indicator to say, oh, you know, stop and look at this for a moment. And it's okay to feel your feelings. You absolutely want to do that, because if you try to suppress them or slap that happy face on, or, you know, you're writing down and you just say, oh my God, I just went into like all negative stuff here. I got to cross this out or erase it. No. Because something's there, it needs to come out. So there is no wrong here. It, you know, all your feelings are totally valid, and you do want to explore them so that you can move them out of you, and so that you ultimately can then move to a higher feeling place, right? But if you just pretend like it's not there and that it's somehow wrong, it gets stuck inside you, almost physically gets stuck inside you, and you can't move past that. And it's another part of what keeps you stuck.
And, you know, I would think, for example, the person whose impulse is to pick up the pencil so that he or she can do the rewriting and make it perfect, that in terms of looking at patterns of behavior, even that could be reflective of a pattern in that person's life. Talk to us a little bit more about patterns.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and just to continue with your example, so if you're picking up that pencil because you're worried that you're going to make a mistake, chances are you have some beliefs and some patterns of behavior around the need to be perfect, right? Because if it's wrong, I'm going to erase it and make it perfect. I want it to look nice. I want it to sound nice, right? And, you know, when we have those sort of patterns of behavior, they're often coming from these beliefs that we have in our subconscious, right? And, you know, we have beliefs, things like, you know, I'm not good enough. Or, you know, in this instance, it all has to be perfect. Otherwise, it's worthless, right? It's sort of a zero-sum game for us. And what happens is those beliefs are deep in our subconscious, which is about 85 to 90% of our mind. So when we're not aware of them, because often we're not, they're in our subconscious, what's happening is that those subconscious beliefs and thoughts are essentially running the roost without us realizing. That's where we're actually making our decisions from. It's almost like an operating system on your computer, right? Is that, you know, you have all these other applications that you use every day, but you don't think about your operating system that much, yet it's absolutely essential, and in fact, nothing can run on your computer without it. Well, your subconscious is like that too. It's underneath the surface. We don't think about it a lot, but everything is running off of it. And so, you know, you may feel like, so we may feel like, okay, I know I'm just going to try to stop being perfect. I sort of recognize that this is going on, and, you know, I just want to move to a place where it's sort of like I can be that person where, you know, done is good enough, you know. And you can consciously think that and want to move to it. But if subconsciously you're still carrying around some kind of belief that, you know, if it's not perfect, then I am not good enough, right? If being perfect is sort of tied into your worth as a human being, then that subconscious belief is going to override the conscious intention always. And so that those patterns of behavior are really helpful because they help us identify what might be a limiting belief that we have in our subconscious. And once we sort of can identify that and explore it, then we can also go in and figure out, okay, where did it come from? Is it really my belief? Does it still have to be my belief? Because you've probably been carrying around with you for decades. Believe me, this stuff happens at a young age. And then can I release it and replace it with something else that better serves me? And I have a whole chapter devoted to that, what I call the reprogramming process. But those patterns of behavior are really great indicators to start sort of, if you like, peeling back the onion of those sort of limiting beliefs that are lurking around in your subconscious.
You know, one of the things that I think is so helpful about your book, and again, the name of it is From Chaos to Clarity, Getting Unstuck and Creating a Life You Love. And the author is the person we're speaking with, Alex Braddy. And let me just spell your name, Alex, for folks who would like to write that down. It's Braatty as the last name. One of the things that I think is really helpful at the end of the chapters is the little segment that you've called It's Your Turn. And it's where you ask those specific questions again, that almost beg for handwritten responses to really help the person walk through the steps, making it a smaller and smaller task rather than this huge, oh my goodness, I've got to understand this, I don't even know where to begin. You actually walk folks through how to begin and how to move through it. I'm looking at the chapter on where do deeply held beliefs come from? And you know, sort of those things that are floating around underneath and you're not really aware of it. And you ask the questions, and the questions are really important. Think about what your parents said or how they behaved on topics of love, money, work, relationships, spirituality or religion, health, and community. And you know, Alex, in just that one question, folks are going to get so much information about themselves and the shoulds that pop up in their lives.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that you brought up the little sort of the end of chapter sections I have. Yeah. I mean, those are intended to sort of have people pause at the end of each sort of major concept or stepping stone along the way and really kind of do a little bit of it themselves, right? Because you can read this book, you can just read it and not do the exercises, and you know, you'll get some great takeaways from it. But working through some of the questions and the processes that I have in here, that's really where you're going to find the big shifts. And yeah, I mean, this question about what your parents said or how they behaved, that is so incredibly important, because usually those beliefs we have in our subconscious, that's where they came from. You know, we are so, you know, susceptible to absorbing everything around us when we are kids. That's what we're meant to do. That's, I mean, that's our job as children. We just absorb everything we hear and watch and observe. And, of course, our greatest role models are usually our parents. You know, it can also be other figures of authority. But when you think back to being a child and you think about some of the things that you heard in your household, you actually have absorbed those and carried them with you through your life as beliefs. And, you know, just to take money as an example, because that's a really big one. I mean, how many of us heard in our household, you know, things like money doesn't grow on trees. You know, you got to sacrifice to get ahead. You can't get anything for nothing. You know, things like that that we heard around money, and we absorbed them, right? Or maybe we watched our parents, you know, how they dealt with money. Maybe there were arguments around it, right? Maybe money became sort of like we made the connection subconsciously as kids that, like, money was a bad topic because my mom and dad were always fighting over it. Or maybe they talked about, you know, oh, rich people are greedy, rich people are mean, right? So we now may have perceptions in our subconscious that that's true. And yet, so here we are as adults, and our intention consciously is that, oh, but I want to make more money, and I'd love to be rich, and I'd love to, you know, have that financial prosperity. But we can't actually get there because, lo and behold, we still have these limiting beliefs that got programmed in as kids. And none of this is about blame, by the way. This is not about blaming your parents at all. I know that's a really easy thing to do. All it's about is essentially becoming more aware, pinpointing, okay, where did that come from? Oh, yeah, you know, my parents did talk about that a lot. Okay, well, if they did, then it's really their belief, right? Is it actually my belief? Does it have to be my belief? I mean, I've been carrying around for a while, but now I'm an adult, and I'm becoming much more self-aware, so I have a choice now. I can continue to keep this belief, knowing where it came from, and knowing that it wasn't really mine. It was kind of given to me as a child, and I adopted it. Or do I want to release it and replace it with a belief that better serves me, right? And for money, maybe maybe that new belief is that, you know, you're in the process of creating the abundance that you want, right? That you know that you can do that. So it is this whole process that I walk through in there. But looking backwards just to get that information is just so incredibly empowering, because it puts you squarely back in control of your life. Instead of just continuing on autopilot with someone else's beliefs, you're able to sort of put a marker in the sand and say, yep, you know what? I've had those for long enough. Maybe they served a purpose at one point, but not anymore. And so it's time for me to make the change there and bring in guiding principles and beliefs that are going to work for me moving forward.
And the wonderful news is that you really can make changes. Alex, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd just like to spend a few more moments talking in particular about money and women, because there's so much that gets caught up in that, for women as well as for men, and the concept of money. So we'll start there when we come back. And folks, you are listening to Mind Talk. We will be back in just a moment. Alex, talk a bit about the lessons that we learn as children, and perhaps some of those automatic thoughts that we have come to, automatic beliefs, if you will, that we have come to make our own, particularly around money, money as it relates to women and money as it relates to men.
Yeah, I love that you're bringing that up in terms of, you know, what are our roles? You know, we sort of have these gender roles sometimes that are sort of programmed in, you know, as children too around money, right? And so, you know, depending on how things were in your household, you may have adopted a very specific thought or belief around money. And so, you know, maybe you lived in a household where dad was the breadwinner and mom was at home. And so in your mind, that is what it is, right? Guys earn money and women stay home. Or maybe you experienced, you know, a childhood where there was divorce in your household and your mom may not have been working before and then was left in this place where she was just dependent on dad to pay the alimony. And you watched that and thought, you know what? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be super independent. I'm going to make my own money, even though I'm a woman and this isn't really the role technically, you know, that I'm supposed to play. I'm going to go out there and do it anyway, and I'm going to be super independent and not rely on any guy. And, you know, all of that is absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with either of those, you know, experiences at all. But what happens then is, you know, so if you're that really independent woman who said, I'm not going to rely on a guy at all, you may find then in your later life that in your relationships, you know, there is this push-pull sometimes with your partner because he may want to provide, right? And you're in this place where you adopted that mindset so long ago, no man can ever provide for me. I am completely independent. This is what I do, right? And I'm not saying that, you know, you have to give up your job or something and just be provided for. It's not that at all. I just mean in small ways. But these are how things play out later in life, right? That they can show up in our relationships or show up in different ways, right? Or if we, you know, were that person who really believed that, you know, hey, it's the guy's job to earn the money and it's the woman's job to stay home, and that's just the way it is, you know, you may find a partner who feels differently. And so it creates, you know, a little bit of tension there because you're both coming with these sort of preconceived notions or beliefs that you learned when you were younger, and that's how you've been going through life. So, yeah, the things that we observe and that we see, especially around money, can have such a great impact on, you know, our ability to earn money as adults, but also our relationships with one another when it comes to money as well.
Money is indeed such a powerful, can it be a rubber band in a relationship? where you can expand and contract in all kinds of ways that you're not really aware of. You talk about the, in terms of releasing negative emotions in one's life, you talk about forgiving people from the past. Why is that important? Why do I need to forgive people who have really hurt me?
Yeah, that. Thank you. I love that question. It is super important because as we harbor resentment and we feel, you know, we want to point the finger of blame and we feel we've been wronged, when we harbor that resentment and those grudges, essentially we are keeping ourselves locked in place. And we can't move out of that place. We can't move beyond that place and get past it without forgiving. And, you know, two things about forgiving that I always tell people, because forgiveness can be a difficult topic, and you may feel that you know, why the heck is it up to me to forgive? I'm the person who was wronged. I'm the victim in all of this, right? So the first way to look at it is, you know, think about whether what's bothering you or what you feel you've been wronged by is something that you actually do yourself. And this is helpful for, like, minor little things. So, for example, you know, you get so mad in traffic when someone cuts you off, right? Like, just, like, crazed. Like, what is this person doing? What a jerk, right? Well, just stop for a moment and think, when was the last time I cut someone off? You know, have I possibly not turned on my blinker and just moved into a lane? You could have been doing it completely unconsciously because there's something else going on in your mind, right? And so when we think about, okay, do I do this? You know, if we realize that we do, it kind of automatically diffuses the situation because you can't really hold that other person in contempt anymore without holding yourself accountable, right? The other way to think about it, and this applies, I think, in sort of more serious cases, right, when you really have those deep traumatic wounds or, you know, traumatic experiences that have happened to you, is that it's really important to know that when you forgive someone, you are not condoning or approving what they did in any way, nor are you letting them off the hook, right? I think that's one of the big things that sort of keeps us from forgiving people is that, oh, well, if I forgive, then I'm basically saying it's okay that they did this to me and that I'm letting them get away with it. No, 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 you're not. In fact, here's a dirty little secret about forgiving. You are releasing yourself. You're not releasing them, you're releasing yourself. So forgiveness, while on the face of it, it seems like such an altruistic thing to do, it's actually a self-centered thing to do in a good way. I don't mean that in a bad way. Sometimes we say self-centered and it's got a negative connotation. But it's good for you to forgive because you are releasing yourself from this place where your feelings of resentment and blame are holding you hostage effectively. So by forgiving, you're setting yourself free, not the other person.
That is such an important piece to remember. And so many people, as you've said, get stuck with the notion that forgiveness means condoning, that all of a sudden you are no longer upset, you're not angry with the person, and now they are free to do, and they don't suffer anymore. That's another one that people get caught up with in forgiveness. If I forgive you and you've harmed me, then you're no longer suffering, and I don't like that.
Right, exactly. And I mean, here's the thing, you know, it's not like when you forgive, the other person somehow, like, they didn't do it at, you know, whatever it was that they did, it suddenly is erased. They still have to live with themselves. They still have to deal with what they did. So it's not about sort of, you know, saying, okay, you did this and there's nothing wrong with it and I, you know, I'm going to be okay with it. You're forgiving so that you can move on yourself. I mean, and I think that that really is the key to remember if you're kind of grappling with that forgiveness topic.
You know, one of the things that, one of the areas in folks' lives in which chaos often reigns, and there is often much of a need to resort to clarity if possible, is in relationships and relationship choices. And so, you know, again, if the underlying belief is that you have to be in a relationship, any relationship, please just let it be somebody sort of alive, that can really create a lot of damage in your life, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, isn't it? So it's, you know, on the one hand, sometimes this whole conversation gets people kind of like, you know, their eyes are rolling, or maybe they get, you know, anxious, or, you know, the fear of it all, right, as we were talking about earlier. But, you know, actually, it's totally empowering. It's actually something to feel good about, because the good news is you don't have to keep looking around for the solution, right? Looking for that other person, or looking for whatever it is that you feel is missing from your life, or that, you know, oh, I'd feel so much better if this happened, or if that person came along, or yada, 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 right? You don't need to keep looking for it, because it's all inside you. You have it all already. And so you can stop the search, right? The search is over. You found, you know, it really, it's about finding yourself, right? And connecting with yourself. I mean, your true self, right? Not the negative chatter that comes in that, you know, that also contributes to you keeping stuck, but truly connecting to who you really are. And, you know, I do talk about that in the book and sort of provide a process for people to do just that as well. You know, oh, when you're talking about connecting to myself, how do I connect to myself? Well, it's actually very simple, and it just requires you to get a little bit quiet and spend just a few moments a day just, you know, getting quiet and getting in touch with yourself and really kind of monitoring what's going on. You know, what am I feeling about this situation? You know, how do I want to feel? You know, what do I want to see happen here today? And actually, like, have a conversation with yourself and check in with yourself so that you are giving yourself that love and respect and compassion that you're probably looking for from other people or other situations around you. But in fact, all you need to do is pause and give that to yourself.
And speaking of patterns of behavior, for those folks who have now gone from 0 to 9,000 on the anxiety scale, thinking about just being still, perhaps that's one of the behaviors, one of the patterns in which you engage that you really need to think about. Because, Alex, as you know, so many people are afraid of being still. They're afraid of what will come up. And what you've said consistently throughout our conversation and throughout your book is that whatever comes up is information. And isn't that just kind of grand? Because it gives you more resources.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that, you know, one of the reasons we kind of, you know, as you said, you go from 0 to 9,000 on the anxiety scale. Like, what do you mean I got to get quiet and spend time with myself? Because very often when we do that, the first thing that we hear is that negative chit-chat, right? And you know what I'm talking about. So let's say you have a good idea, and the minute you have it, in comes that chatter that goes, what are you thinking of? This is nuts. Don't be crazy. What will other people think if you go do that? You're nuts. Like, don't do this. This is just stupid. Forget about this idea. Get back to whatever it is you should be doing, right? We've all experienced that. And that negative chatter is often what keeps us stuck and what makes us fear having that conversation with ourselves. Because, like, why do you want to have the conversation like that? That's pretty dang depressing, right? Like, I don't want to be beat up on every time I stop and talk to myself, right? So part of the process that I describe in the book is learning about that negative chatter and how to quiet it and to recognize it's not real. So it's not about having to sit there and listen to that negative chit-chat. It's about tuning into this positive voice that is inside you. But it's unlike the negative voice, which comes in uninvited, that positive voice needs to proactively be invited in. And that's how you do it. And when you have those moments of stillness and you go in and connect to it.
So is that perhaps a first step that you would like folks to take? To sort of practice being still?
I think it's one of the first steps. It's not the very first step, but, you know, as you go through the book, I sort of kind of gently lead you into it without you realizing it, that you're doing it, because as you sort of get quiet and answer some of those questions that I have at the end of the first few chapters, you're actually kind of doing it. right? You're actually getting in tune with yourself as you just work through, quietly work through those questions. And then sort of later on, I get more specific about, okay, how do you actually do it? But you actually work up to it, because I think that initial kind of go from, I'm on the go all the time, 60 miles an hour, and now you want me to just sit still and connect with this part of myself that I may not have talked to in years. Okay, that's a bit weird. I don't know if I'm doing it right, right? You've all these questions and doubts. So I kind of ease people into that gently. For me, I think the very first thing that I think is the first thing that people really have to grasp, and the first step in all of this, is kind of what we have been talking about today, which is realize that you have the power to change things, right? You are the creator of your experience. All those thoughts, feelings, beliefs you have on the inside are contributing to your outward reality. And so when you really grab hold of that concept and fully embrace it, that I am the creator of my life, and yes, I may not love what I've created thus far, but now that I realize that I'm the creator of my life, it means that I can move forward in a different way. It means that I can deliberately create my life instead of doing it on autopilot or default like I might have been in the past.
Alex, you have written such a clear, wonderful, gentle, I think, guide to changing one's life from chaos to clarity. What's your life like these days? You've completely changed it.
I have, and I love it a lot more, I have to say. I'm a coach and a writer and a speaker now. And what's interesting is, yes, I'm doing all those things on a very different platform now in the personal development world, but it's not like I left everything I ever learned in my 15 years in corporate research behind, because I was coaching people in that forum. I was writing all the time in that forum. I was speaking and presenting all the time in that forum. And so I think, as your listeners are contemplating changes in their life and, is a change in career in their, future, or, big leaps like that, just remember that you have so much that you've already learned. You have so many skills and talents and abilities. So while you may change sort of the what, you often bring along all of those talents and skills you already have. So what may seem like a 180 degree turn actually isn't. You're just applying things in a different way and in a way that brings more meaning for you. And that's certainly what I have done in how I have sort of created my new professional life, because now I'm helping people who kind of were in the same place I was, right? Really burned out, stressed, overwhelmed, feeling really stuck with where they were, and wanted to, find a better work-life balance, make some changes, find transitions, and work through them and become more self-aware. And so for me, that is really meaningful and purposeful work. But I bring along all the knowledge and skills and talents that I have, built up along the way, and I'm using all those in a daily, in a daily way, but just in a different application.
Alex, before I let you go, you've got to let folks know where they can get more information about what you're doing and where they can get more information about your book.
Oh, thank you. That's so gracious. So the book is available on Amazon in Kindle, paperback, and audio. And if you want to reach out to me directly, I am a coach, I am a speaker. My website is the best place to go, and that is simply alexbratty.com, alexbratty.com.
Alex, thank you so much. I know you got to get out of here, but it's really been a pleasure talking with you today.
Thank you. It's been an honor to be on your show. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure.
And thank you for listening to this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional of your choosing. Mind Talk is available to you on demand at myndtalk.org. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286. The best way to be in touch is by going to myndtalk.org. And folks, always remember, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. Take care.
Thank you.